Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have the exciting part two episode with geoengineering author Ilana Freeland. Now, Ilana's soon-to-be-published book on the space fence, set for release in early 2017, is a groundbreaking follow-up to her Chemtrails HARP and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth book. Now, in part one, we looked at the history of the building of the space fence, including attempts to ionize the atmosphere using advanced HARP technology. In this special episode, we'll discuss the deeper implications, militarily, sociologically, and even the psycho-spiritual aspects driving the agenda. Was the SDI Star Wars program cover for a much larger scenario? Here we go. Ilana Freeland, Space Fence, the secret plan to ionize the heavens.
The powers that be are studying the impact that radiation is having on the United States. You know, these psychopaths that have this kind of power over this planet, our magnetosphere is so precious to us, and it has already been put through the ringer along with the ionosphere by the HARP experiments.
Dark Journalist, go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions, the biggest secrets, the darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist, go for truth. With top guests like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we as a society escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which has got a negative return on investment, it's killing human productivity, and where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have, because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist, go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special winter discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, this is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.
Well, hello everyone. I'm excited to bring you this important part two episode with Ilana Freeland on the space fence. And I want to come out here and say I think that this issue of the space fence will probably be the biggest issue facing the world in 2017, because it's tied into so many different aspects, from surveillance, centralized control, advanced technology, just a major issue, and it really is a crucial pivot point. Now, there was a great response to part one of this episode, and a few people felt also that the concept of the space fence was too overwhelming, and were a bit intimidated and dispirited by the facts on the whole thing. Trust me, knowing about it is far more empowering than not, so keep that in mind as we go forward. Quick reminder here to sign up for our free newsletter so you don't miss any of the exciting shows we have coming up. Ilana, welcome back, and thank you for being here for part two of our deep discussion on the space fence.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I want to say as we get started here that I find your work around these really kind of complex and esoteric subjects really the most accessible of anything that's out there. You certainly give us the scientific background to this whole range of issues. But I also know with your Rudolf Steiner training, being a Waldorf teacher, and being well steeped in anthroposophical thought, which is a movement I have great respect for, that your esoteric understanding really complements your scientific work, even though you don't make a point out of showing your more spiritual leanings in your research.
Right. Which I really don't like.
Yeah.
I don't like people coming forward with their spiritual stuff. I mean, I feel bad about that. But you know, it's like, what else have you got? Great, I'm glad you have that. Now, what else have you got? And can you tie what you just told me to that? That's what I want. We're here for this world,
right?
And the people in it, and nature, and you know, and we're just this teeny weeny little spot on a long historical spectrum, and here we are, and this is my watch. That's what I always say to people. I'm not going to sit aside during my watch. Well, that's crazy. This is my watch. I'm going to work my buns off for what I know to be true. And that is life to me. It's not a matter of, oh, I have life. And then part of my lifestyle is I have this nice Facebook thing and I'm writing books. And no, this is it. This is the pinpoint. And for me, maybe it's because I'm a Romanian, but for me, everything depends on this one pinpoint and what I do with it.
Yes.
And that's my future lives. That's the heredity I have as an incarnating being over and over again. You know, I'm responsible for that. And I'm responsible for what's ahead. So, you know, I watch people and they just sort of dream their way through life. And, you know, I'm an awakener. And if they're up for it, I'm willing to awaken them or be one of their awakeners so that they can really make hay while the sun shines here.
Mm-hmm.
The sun's not even shining anymore with our skies.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
You know what I mean, Daniel. And you're someone, too, that you pursue what you believe in and believe is valuable to that moment in history that we are now sharing, because we're time beings.
Mm-hmm.
We travel through time, and I'm Ilana now, and I'll be somebody else, and I've been somebody else, and, you know, bless Ilana, but, you know, I'm not going to try to clothe and, you know, and just think about Ilana.
Uh-huh.
This is our moment in an amazing time where the balance between good and evil is just, it's visceral. You know, I can feel it. And I see it as a great bonus to be born now. No wonder there's 7 billion people on the planet. They all want to be here.
Yeah.
I don't blame them.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I can definitely see where you're coming from. I am going to ask you, for the benefit of our viewers, to give us your impression, based on that Steiner perspective, of the rise of these transhumanist ideas that are taking over and are ultimately responsible for fueling the development of the space fence. Now, would you say that this is the same influence that Steiner warned us of over a century ago, this Ahrimanic influence?
Absolutely. Probably beyond Ahriman. Would be the Soreth, would be the sun spirit that Steiner writes about, and that would include the Asuras, and these are all from old Persian religion. These terms, Ahriman as well, but I think Steiner's brilliance is to show that the evil has not just two natures, the Luciferic and the Ahrimanic.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, it would seem that Satan was more like Ahriman.
Yes.
But also has a third nature, which I believe that AI is going to be involved with, is the Asuras. And the Asuras are, in a way, the Lucifer and Ahriman part of the nature of evil. It's the nature of evil that makes us work. Otherwise, we're all, Steiner said, we all have an Austrian soul. You know, we're all lazy. He was Austrian, so he could say that.
Yeah.
The evil makes us have to choose constantly, the dual nature of evil. But then there's this other third branch of evil that I think we're going to see more and more of now, that CERN is opening certain gates. We saw Jack Parsons open gates with L. Ron Hubbard back in the 50s.
Yes.
No, Crowley opened gates in Egypt and who knows where else. So you know, we're having all that Ahrimanic religion, which Satanism is an Ahrimanic religion, that's coming to the fore because this is Ahriman's time, the computer, everything being very cold and metallic, and the human being gobbled up by all of these influences that are Ahrimanic in nature and Luciferic, like the media and Hollywood. That's all very Luciferic. But they're going to have a more penetrating, now that we've ingested all these heavy metals and the microprocessors and the sensors and all these biologically engineered experiments that we're also ingesting on the nanoscale. Now it's internalizing, it's going inside of us. That's very Ahrimanic. That's very much Ahriman's nature, just to dig in and get in there. And then with the electromagnetism, I mean, that's Ahriman's nature is electric.
Absolutely. And we could do a whole show just on this Ahriman aspect from the point of view of anthroposophy. It's very intriguing stuff. And, you know, I've studied Steiner's work for really since my teens. And he seemed to present this kind of interesting vision of the future back then. So we're talking the turn of the century, around 1900. And, you know, this whole era of the transhumanist is something, it seemed to me, that he presaged very well. So it's very advanced stuff. And this tie-in with the electrical nature of Ahriman and the hidden technology, I think, is very fascinating in terms of how it relates to what Steiner called the doppelganger. Now, can you touch on that for us here? And give us an idea of how the doppelganger and the spiritual dimensional Steiner concept of Ahriman relates to the transhumanist movement.
We're born with the doppelganger is waiting for us, just out of the womb, and enters us and then leaves our bodies 3 days before death, and because it can't go through death. But that too, that makes us electrical as well as etheric beings. So we have both processes in us, and it's the Ahrimanic technology that now is just consuming everything, gobbling the whole earth up. Whole forests are dying, Daniel. The soil is dying. All of nature is dying. They don't want nature. They want to be the gods of this realm. And they want to use DNA to get back whatever they need. They can just let species go day by day. It's hard for people to encompass such a hubris as these Satanist elites who, you know, whose upbringings are highly different from any loving family upbringing that a peon like us might have. So, you know, that spiritual aspect, as you were saying earlier, it has to be brought in. But I've been hoping to bring it in first through the thinking so that I can strengthen people's they have no confidence in their thinking, and to give them the confidence that you don't need a PhD to think about this. Look at the PhDs, they're thinking like in a wedge. They can't think outside the wedge. So, you know, don't think that we need to hear from them. What we need to hear from is people who are true individuals, who are have an inner life, an inner spiritual life, and it's very real.
Well, I do think your knowledge of the kind of spiritual underpinnings at work in this battle that we're seeing between humanity and the transhumanist agenda does give your work a serious edge. You know, when we look at the last 15 years or so, we can definitely see a quickening that's happening in society. Now, it's a quickening that's certainly going in the wrong direction. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But it is a quickening, nonetheless. And I think it's fascinating to look at because as you see the culture degenerate, it's almost as if something powerful is stirring right underneath, bubbling up. And it reminds me very much of some of the positive movements that happened after World War II, which, of course, was terrible, you know, but it's almost as if things had to get that bad before we had a pendulum swing back and a more aware consciousness coming forward.
Yeah, and in a way, we could both say our grandparents probably felt that as well. The world, what's it coming to? You know, when the 60s happened, exactly. I remember my grandparents, Alana, I just don't know what you're doing, you know. but this is not the same. This is not just a generational difference. And the speed at which society is changing, it's not just that. There's more to it. But people, especially white liberals, they're so hesitant to dig in to what this might be if it's not politically correct. And that is the that is how this has happened, because we're all too hesitant. We're all too respectful of differences and multicultural and this and that. That's all surface, but it's a very convincing surface. It's absolutely brilliant how Bill of Rights has been undermined. I mean, it's been the right pace. It's, you know, now there's no Fourth Amendment left. You know, they can come in anytime. The privacy. What's that with the telecommunications industry doing what it's doing? There is all these things have been just sort of pulled off like feathers off of the bird of liberty, and meanwhile everybody's just kind of stood around and watched it, just my, you know, or maybe they call their legislator. Oh, that's going to do a lot of good, you know. they're all in bed with corporate America.
Oh yeah.
What are they going to do? Or they're being blackmailed for dirty pictures of them with children. I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that white liberalism has taken such a passive role.
Well, that is very interesting. Of course, white liberalism was very key to changes that took place in the 60s. But after that, seemed to get watered down and seemed to forget their own ideals. Now, how do you see what happened there?
I don't quite know where that happened. It certainly was before 2001 and the Twin Towers, before the Patriot Act. It was happening back when I was younger, and I realized, I mean, in the 60s, we all would make jokes about the white liberals because we were the radicals. Well, not all of us really were. But we were trying to liberate ourselves from this vacuum cleaner of commoditization of the republic, and we didn't really know that's what we were doing. But we were going back to the land, and we didn't own anything, and we traded goods and services. We had no money. We were experimenting with the way people used to live. And we sneered at the white middle class and wondered why they weren't out marching. Like, I think that some of them did march with Dr. King down in the South. And that was like, wow, great. You know, they could feel the black-white thing, but they couldn't see anything beyond that. You know, they were willing to even believe that there was only one assassin in all those murders. For decades. Mm-hmm. It's only been recently that they've realized, oh, yeah. You know, what is it that takes so long when you're a law-abiding citizen? Is it then that you are there to, you're there to hold on to what you think democracy is, what you've been taught it is? You're not aware of the impact media is having on you. You're not aware of many deep things because you're getting another car, you're getting another home, you're getting a vacation to Tahiti. Is it that comfort and convenience has completely ensnared you in a slavery that will drag your nation down into slavery as well? Well, that is what happened. That's exactly what happened.
Yes. Wow. Well, that really is what happened. You know, it proved the ultimate diversion for them, becoming more and more material and established. They certainly tuned out and lost their sense of ethical balance. Now, it's just amazing. And I'm glad you mentioned the media there, because not only are they the number one enabler of the corruption, but they're also the, you know, anesthetizers in chief, just really creating a false reality for us to buy into. And one of their greatest failures, in my opinion, is the lack of reporting on the dangers to us here in America from the Fukushima nuclear accident in Japan. And we know now from recent studies that the radiation level is climbing there on the West Coast, where you are. How do you feel about the radiation hazards from Fukushima?
Well, it's definitely operating synergistically with what they're dumping on us.
Okay.
And you can imagine, if you've got conductive metals in the atmosphere and they're slowly falling, right, because of gravity coming down, and then you have the radiation moving along, well, that can't be good for us.
Right, right.
I mean, it stimulates the radiation. And Fukushima happened in 2011, and I make a big case for it being a HAARP instigated event in my Chemtrails HAARP book. And since 2011 is kind of right in where you were talking about all the activism began in 2010, 2011, and that's when the radiation began moving, and it took a while for the plume to come over us, as I recall. I mean, I always go to Lorraine Murray. Mm-hmm. She's sort of my weather person for radiation, and I'm concerned. I have Ludol's 0.5 iodine, 0.5% iodine. I take a few drops a week, just in case. And I assume that the powers that be are studying the impact that radiation is having on the United States, along with the various chemical compositions over different geographic areas. I assume they're doing very close Nazi-like lists of exactly what is going on, because I believe their greatest hope is that there will be a small remnant of humanity that can adjust to anything they're going to send our way. And that would be radiation, that we would evolve to be able to handle radiation, particularly the children. I mean, I'm too old, I won't evolve, but the children, and that they'll be able to even handle it when it's an entirely wireless atmosphere and there are waves traveling every which way, and many military operations are ongoing under AI. Artificial intelligence. And so that's how I see it. They don't care how many of us die. And if we get sick, well, that's good for disaster capitalism for the medical and the big pharma industries. No problem there. Just to see who makes it and who doesn't. And then conjecture why. What is it about them? I mean, they've got the genetics on almost all of us. I don't think they even need you to come in and take a swab anymore. I think they can actually do it remotely now. I think I read that.
Oh, well, that is disturbing. And I just think of all the free thinkers that I associate with Oregon and Washington State.
Yeah.
That's quite an interesting target for an experiment like that.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, I feel for people. I do notice that the chemtrail action in some places, I think right away of Croatia. Oh my gosh, what has Croatia done to deserve what is being... I don't think they've had a clear day. I think it's been dark there for a couple of years.
Fascinating.
And every time someone sends me something from Croatia, it's just a doom and gloom over, you know, just hanging heavy. And that's the other question is, you know, another delivery system is definitely going to be drones. And why not some of the small drones, and they can fly much lower?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's an ongoing experimentation that they're engaged in with this.
Well, if you were to look ahead to the year 2020 in America, and this is a running thread through the shows I've done in the last year or so, So let's just skip ahead a few years. So by then, the space fence is more fully implemented, let's say. And certainly a lot of these programs have taken major steps over where they are today. And, so I guess the question is, what's the progression here? What kind of changes in our regular lives can we expect to see in a world where the space fence is fully operational?
Ah, that's a good question. I think that for a while, anyway, people are going to find a way to adjust to the form of fascism that we're now undergoing. And they're going to live low to the ground, keep their jobs, such jobs as there are, constantly maybe less and less react to the false flag events that are going to be constantly coming down the pike to sort of knee-jerk us into more and more law enforcement and an acceptance of the necessity of surveillance. I think more and more people are going to get very sick. Their immune systems are not going to be functioning very well, and that's going to include younger people. They'll be providing plenty of guinea pigs for various experiments going on in the medical industry, because a lot of these, the nanos for sure, and lasers, and all of these things are being used medically, and so that will dovetail nicely for the medical industry. I think people are just going to expect less and less of their lives, and will there be an uprising somewhere like Anonymous or something where people can congregate? It's the congregating that I can't quite get hold of, Daniel, of how you do that when you have surveillance on this scale. Now, one ray of weird hope I have, which is because I just wrote the section on AI, artificial intelligence, supercomputers, yes, et cetera, I was listening to a video, which I don't think I sent it to you, but it's well worth looking at. D-Wave Corporation is the only corporation thus far, to my knowledge, that has produced a very interesting artificial intelligence computer. And D-Wave has been sold to, early on it was sold to Lockheed Martin. I'm sure Raytheon's in it. All the big guns of American society, the defense contractors, the military-industrial complex. They all have one, and it's constantly developing. And this presentation that this CEO of D-Wave gave was very shocking, because at one point he said that when he's standing, something like, when he's standing beside the D-Wave, and it's really only a chip, but it has to have the coldest temperature in the world in order to function, which, again, is Ahriman. Mm-hmm. It has to have the coldest, it's colder than outer space. It's colder than sub-zero. I mean, I had to look it up. We're talking like negative 273 or something like that.
Fascinating.
So it has that. So it has a chamber all its own, a black box that it lives in. Very, very interesting, the black box, because it reminded me of Islam and Mecca. So he said that when he's standing beside it, he feels that he is standing next to an altar to an alien god.
Wow.
I about fell over. It was great.
Unbelievable.
An altar to an alien god. And he's saying this happily.
Whoa.
This is a devotee. So here's how I see it. Maybe now that this AI, and he explains it quite well in this little piece, and I'd already known it because I went to the D-Wave site and read for myself. But it seems that the AI computer because of the way it depends on qubits, Q-U-B-I-T-S, quantum bits, what a normal computer does is it has the ones and the zeros, and you know, one is positive, one's negative, and so you've got this constant thing going on. But the AI computer can do both at once, and they've decided that it does that because it is in contact with parallel dimensions.
Right.
So if indeed, I mean, we already know about CERN bringing in various portal and beings. All right, so if the AI computer, particularly the D-Wave one, is in touch with other dimensions, then perhaps that's where our savior will come from. I don't mean a savior like an actual being. I mean like something will happen through those parallel dimensions that drags this infrastructure down. This is just my latest science fiction fantasy.
That's good. No, I appreciate that, actually. It is very interesting. And they are getting into areas that they don't know a lot about, for sure. They don't understand the ramifications at all. I don't think that they're experts.
No, you're right. And they even admit that they do, even a supercomputer, they do not understand what is going on in there during the computation. Mm-hmm. They have no clue. So are we looking at the ghost in the machine?
Could be.
I think we are.
Well, we are in the era of advanced robotics, and it could become the central threat of our time, which takes us back again to the idea of the space fence, because I want to ask you here if there's anything in your research that supports the idea that the true reason for building the space fence is to keep off-world groups out and to deal with the UFO phenomena, for example.
That could very well be. It's like my seventh operation that I put in the book for the ionized atmosphere is the detection and obscuration of exotic propulsion technology.
Right.
And there is a site now up and going run primarily by Sean Gautreau, which is called What is in Our Skies. And people are taking some extraordinary infrared photographs and seeing triangular craft in the clouds. Now, the question is, are the triangular craft ours? Are they like the Aurora, which, of course, the military never admitted existed, but many military people know it did,
right?
Or does. Or is it from one of these dimensions that the D-Wave AI is in touch with?
Right.
I don't know. I think we have to keep an open mind because I don't remember who said it, but it was, if you don't think quantum physics is unbelievable, then you don't understand quantum physics. And that's kind of how I feel, is we're on the precipice, on the threshold of a very different time when things that we've been taught over and over do not exist are suddenly obvious. And I think that is one of the advantages of an ionized atmosphere. You're talking plasma. We have plasma. And if these ships, say, or beings, whatever, are showing up here in the 3D world with plasma bodies, then would we then, if we had the right radio frequency, be able to see them? And would we be able to shroud them with our cloud cover from the population?
Right.
So that the population is not totally freaked out. Possible. All possible.
Well, that is really intriguing in a way. You mentioned Sean Gautreau there, and mm-hmm. you've referenced some of his research and ideas before about plasma. Can you get into some of that here?
Well, if indeed we're looking at plasma clouds, they are plasma. Plasma is the fourth state of matter. It's sort of, it can be a gas, it can be a fire, it can be on fire, but all in all, it is matter, but it is a very fine matter. In the 19th century, they used to have these seances. I know because William Crookes, the father of chemistry, used to go to them, and I have some photos of him that I got somewhere on the web, where there's a seer sitting there doing her her closed eye seeing, and suddenly there appears next to Mr. Crookes an ectoplasm person. And ectoplasm was ectoplasma. And so if we are able with our instruments and our chemicals, and I'm sure that they have this in mind, to see further into the dimensions that are sort of piled on ours, and we can't see them, but we feel them sometimes, and we have very extrasensory people who can perceive them in some way. If now we have the materials by which we can perceive these, can we then influence them, or can we cut deals with them that they will in turn influence our dimension? No, I think all of this is on the table now at the Pentagon, at DARPA, at certainly Lockheed Martin, TR-3, or L-5, whatever those guys are, all those military contractors who are, you know, they're so deep into this research and the idea of ultimate control over the planet. Yeah.
This well, that is fascinating about the ectoplasm, and I want to bring that CERN in here because this idea of opening dimensional doorways, you're dealing with other entities, basically. And we all know that ostensibly the Hadron Collider is all about finding the God particle, and you know, supposedly they found it, maybe. So there are all these things around it that work as kind of the cover story for what it is. But because of the nature of its budget, $6 billion, the strange secrecy around it, the fact that it's actually a sovereign entity, which means, you know, you can't take it to court and so on. What is it, and I know that we don't have all the facts about CERN yet, but what is it, given the fact that you've looked at these issues from a variety of angles, what do you think is going on with CERN?
Given that I don't know nearly as much as Anthony Patch, and unfortunately he used to live just 2 hours south of me, but now he's moved down to California, so I won't be able to go down and have breakfast with him anymore. I am concerned about CERN and its influence on the magnetosphere. Mm-hmm. I'm the simple meat and potatoes level person here.
Yeah.
And it has a tremendous influence on the magnetosphere when it fires up. And it has been surmised that some of the airplanes that have simply dropped from the sky and never been heard from again are in part due to firing up CERN. Our magnetosphere is so precious to us, and it has already been put through the ringer along with the ionosphere by the HARP experiments and the blasting of the Van Allen belts in the 50s with nuclear devices. I mean, you know, these psychopaths that have this kind of power over this planet, my concern is that, yes, entities will come in as portals are opened, and it is very, very obvious to me that CERN, with all of its mythology and its weird dances and its Shiva, or is it Shiva outside their portals? It seems obvious to me that whenever you see the mythology, you're not just talking a good advertising biz gimmick. You're talking Freemasons or other secret societies that have large things in mind, because they do not dawdle and waste time the way many of us seem to do. they are committed 24/7 and they have the funds and the resources to hire all those minions that they need in order to pull off vast enterprises, they are there and they are behind this. So the portals, yes, I'm sure that's going on. The question to me is, how will this influence the magnetosphere that we need in order to survive as a planet? That's my concern about CERN.
I can definitely appreciate that. We've done some in-depth episodes on it, and we have some important ones coming up with Dr. Joseph Ferrell on some new research that he has on the Hadron Collider. Of course, the Webb was conceived as a CERN project, and they've had a powerful influence from their headquarters there in Geneva. The first test run of the Hadron Collider actually took place in 2010. This is a very pivotal year. You know, it has many implications. I've been working on a documentary about a large daytime sighting out of New York City in 2010 and how, you know, this was actually predicted by a NORAD officer. So I was able to speak with the source of that prediction, and it's a fascinating story. But what always surprises me is that when I speak with the best known UFO investigators out there, none of them have heard of it or seem very interested, really. And it's incredibly well documented for UFO sighting, but they don't remember it.
No, I do. I do remember. And the fact that it was 9 years after the towers, just wondering if, because I think I did flag that event and keep a note on it somewhere. I'll have to check that, Daniel.
Oh, great.
But what we have more challenges regarding UFOs now. Of course, one is that we have them. And I know we have them. I read that book by the guy that works for Jane's Defense Weekly, you know, one of the best military magazines in the world. He wrote a book on tracking down anti-gravity technology, and he started out being very in doubt that it even existed, that it was just one of those urban myths that everybody talks about, and he didn't know much about Townsend Brown.
Is this the Hunt for Zero Point?
Yeah, the Hunt for Zero Point.
Yes, that's Nick Cook.
Okay. Oh, it's such a good book.
Yes, fascinating.
As he tracked it down, it's the same way I went. When I was tracking, I wasn't tracking that, but I was tracking down the shadow government. And had to go through the Nazis, of course. And so, to me, it's a done deal that we have anti-gravity. The question, next question we have, so is it us up there or is it them? You know, which one is it?
Right.
The next part is, what about the holographs? The holography now with an atmosphere loaded with barium can be very spectacular. And you've probably seen that one in China, where an entire city is sort of floating above the water and people on the bridge are commenting on it.
Yeah.
So is it holography? Are we looking at holography? Are we looking at real crafts from another dimension? Are we looking at ours? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I don't know which is who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it makes it very difficult to discern what's going on there, for sure. Of course, holograms and that kind of technology wasn't really happening in the 30s and 40s, so holograms don't explain the phenomena very well. The two options we've had are that there's this alien civilization visiting here, gathering info on us, and there's the whole abduction phenomena that goes with that. And the other is that there are secret military craft. Both of them are viable in their own way, but they don't really answer to what's actually going on. So it's an incomplete picture, and there's nothing at this point that ties it all together.
No, and I may be wrong on this, but I maintain that the craft coming from other parallel dimensions will put on plasma bodies. They will use plasma because they are not subject to the physical the way we are. And it can look very real. And you can touch it, even, plasma. But I don't see that it's physical ships coming from Alpha Centauri or something.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it would be entirely possible through a parallel dimension to come from Alpha Centauri instantaneously. You know, it's not a matter of, well, who'd be in a ship that long. They're not subject to, you know, that. I understand that. We're talking about scalar types of physics that do not depend on time and space at all. So that's not the problem for me. The problem is I just don't think they'd have physical ships. I think the most physical they'd have would be plasma.
That is a really interesting point, that there is a third option here, which is interdimensional travel coming through. But I will say this in terms of the really deep research on the UFO subject from whistleblowers and so on. It seems that they have a lot of unanswered questions inside the military about what's going on here. So that suggests to me they're not in control of the action around the UFO phenomena, you know, at all.
Well, because of the military's penchant for need to know and compartmentalization, not really sure about that.
Yeah.
Also, there's mind control. You know, some ex-military have come forward and said this, that, and the other. But are they mind-controlled? Have they been sent forward? Because a lot of people have the idea, oh, well, they're because knowledge is power, they're going to hide all the information. No, no. No, they're going to trot out quite a bit, because the easiest place to hide something is in full sight. I tend to believe that what Michael A. Hoffman II wrote in his fabulous little book, Secret Societies, and what's the rest of it? Anyway, Secret Societies is the first part, where he says that there are three phases that we've been put through. And the first phase was the destruction, creation and destruction of matter. That would have been the atomic bomb in 45 that was blown off down in New Mexico. And the second one was the killing of the king, and that would have been the death of Kennedy in Dallas. And the third one is the revelation of the method. And that's what we're in now. They're going to tell us what they do all the time. They're going to do it in movies, and they're doing it. They're showing us. But it's got a little bit of a fictional spin, and it's fun, and it's entertainment, as we call it. You know, in America, everything's entertainment. But the revelation of the method is important because they want our complicity. They want us to know and do nothing.
Hmm.
That is the true satanic premise. It isn't good enough. If you read Aleister Crowley or Jack Parsons or any of those guys, they'll tell you, you know, it's not good enough that we can take your soul. We want you to give it to us.
Mm-hmm.
We want your complicity. That's what makes it a true sacrifice to that dark god. And that's kind of how I feel now. I see a lot being told to us, but again, because people lack the context, they don't know how to interpret it after, 100 years of being taught that there's no such thing as God. There's no such thing as evil. There's no such thing as real religion. You know, everything is materialistic. They don't know how to interpret because they don't have a context that they can draw upon in order to interpret what they're being told. And that just gives giggles and kicks to the dark side. They love that. We're just stupid. We're so stupid.
Well, we're starting to wise up now anyway. It's getting very interesting. The Space Fence, your new book, will be out early next year?
Well, the publisher, same publisher as the Chemtrails Heart book, has announced it. It will be out spring 2017.
That's great. I can't wait.
Then we'll have plenty of time to edit and go over the illustrations. It'll still have illustrations like the last book did. So I'm really happy that I'll have the same publisher, because I already know his style, and he knows mine. So.
Yeah, well, that's Feral House, and they have an amazing catalog of titles, including yours.
Yes.
Definitely. And just a show note here that we have a new CERN episode, two of them, coming up with Joseph Farrell next week. So subscribe now to make sure you don't miss it. That discount is still out there for as long as we can keep it going. And Alana, just excellent stuff. Thank you so much for coming on for two episodes and sharing this important research. And we'll have you back on when the Space Fence comes out.
Always a pleasure, Daniel. Always a pleasure with you.
Thank you, Alana. Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with Alana Freeland on the Space Fence, the secret plan to ionize the atmosphere. You can find more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.